The amazing story, Tanya, that's really simply being known now as the boys in the cave. It's just a rollercoaster of emotion, isn't it?
Yep. 12 boys, age 11 to 16, with their 25-year-old soccer coach, caught in this cave system. And we were delighted, thinking, okay, story's over.
Found them yesterday.
But then we realised they're 4 kilometres in, and this is not going to be a very quick rescue.
And we did think, when you think that, couple of days... Months they're talking about.
Jeez. Well, 7 News reporter Natasha Squarey is in Chiang Rai. She's on site, and we thought we'd catch up and see what the word is today. Good morning, Natasha.
Good morning, guys.
Trying to just get our head around where those boys are without maps and things like that is hard too, Natasha, meaning, you know, the cave system, the water, why they can't get to them.
Oh, look, Steve, it's extremely complicated. This is one of the most extreme sort of complex rescue operations we've probably ever seen. These boys have spent their 11th night in that cave, but the good news is it was the first night that they weren't alone. There is now a team of Navy SEALs with them, including a doctor and a nurse, and they have food and water. So obviously, like you said, this is a huge rescue mission. The eyes of the world are watching every step of this, but the main focus, I guess, right now is to for these boys to be able to be strong enough to get out. So this doctor and the nurse are just really looking after these boys, because obviously they do want to see them come out with their coach, but every sort of opportunity is still being weighed up at this stage. There is no plan locked in, because sadly there is no easy way out of this cave.
Okay, so then how do they get into the cave, meaning then how will the boys get out? With the doctor and the nurse and the team that are there, is there 50% having to dive through murky waters to get to where they are? Is it a 20% dive and a bit of a swim? How much is underwater, and what will these kids have to go through to get out?
Oh, look, Tanya, from what I'm hearing, the majority is underwater, and we're not just talking about, a straightforward dive either, you know, even if that exists. You know, we're talking muddy waters, murky waters. It could be possibly fast-flowing at times. These professional divers can't even see what's ahead of them. It could be up, down, anywhere. So I can't even imagine how these boys are feeling confronted with the possibility of doing this, considering the majority of this group can't even swim. So obviously a very daunting option for everyone involved, including the guys will have to train them in that really confined space, and not a usual space where you would teach someone to dive. It would be the last option that they would like to consider, but the weather here, as you would know, in northern Thailand is just so unpredictable, and we do have really heavy rain forecast in the coming days. So if we do get that heavy rainfall, it could really cause further complications. It could worsen the flooding in the cave. So these rescuers, they're really up against it.
Plus, you know, they've put all the piping in to try and manually pump as much water out to keep the water low. Is there talk when they're saying, you know, a month, there's two ways of looking at this. There's, you know, build the boys' strength up, train them to dive. Or the other one is, are they talking that possibly the water going down and they can walk out?
Possibly. Look, they are trying, as you said, to pump the water out, but it's worked in some places, but not others. So they're still trying that. They're still giving that a crack, but it's not looking good. And when they say, look, these boys could be in there for up to 4 months, that's actually taking us to the end of the monsoon season in October. So then that's somewhat of an indication that they may just sit and wait until the water recedes itself, and they're not confronted with this heavy rainfall, which is just such a nightmare.
Where this is, I mean, are the families, like, travelling to the system? Are they camped around the cave area, or is everyone just back at home and people are trying to be calm?
Oh, no, absolutely. They're here at the site. The opening to the cave is about 4 kilometres away. Obviously, there's the big operations in place, but there is a section. Everyone's there. They've been holding out hope since these boys went missing, 10 days ago. So they're here, and of course there was that relief and that celebration when they were found on Monday night by those British divers. But you can only imagine these families and these parents how anxious they would be. You know, it's a bit overshadowed. That relief and celebration is a little bit overshadowed by what's happening. They don't know when they'll see their son's face. It's really quite heartbreaking.
The only positive, and I'm saying only, meaning that the people there, Navy SEALs, the countries involved, you've got the best of the best of the best, attempting
UK
to come up with an idea.
UK, US, China, Australia.
That's it.
So hopefully, I guess the whole world will be just now hoping and praying that these boys can be brought to safety, every single one of them.
They're still trying to look for a vent on top as well.
Yeah, okay. Well, Natasha, we really appreciate your time today, and obviously we'll see your reports on Channel 7. But take care of you, and we may talk to you again soon if that's okay.
Thanks, guys.
The fear of the fibre. We're talking asbestos. When it was discovered that that house in Glendale had loose fill asbestos insulation, obviously those in the know would go, well, that's not unusual. Or it is. It might be unusual, but it's not isolated. It's not like it's the only one.
No, particularly. Well, aren't they talking about houses that were built post-1980 might be okay? You're talking about a large portion of homes in Newcastle and the Hunter built pre-1980, aren't you?
Yeah. Look, and the percentage that will test positive to this free testing that is available now until the end of July, you can register online if you suspect that could be your house, and they will carry out this testing. So if you have a house pre-1980, you can jump on to loosefillasbestos.nsw.gov.au or Service New South Wales and organise it there. But the thing about this testing has been going on for a while, and here's a good thing. Of more than 65,000 properties that have been tested in New South Wales since 2014, there has only been 149 positives.
That's good.
Yeah.
So that, I mean, there's a percentage there.
When you put it in perspective.
But it's small.
Yeah.
But having said that...
I like that when you go in a couple of my mates' houses. It's like, I've just got to go down the shed. Oh, be careful, mate. It's like, what do you mean? Oh, because their sheds are built with fibro.
Okay, so this is where I come unstuck, because this is one thing, this loose fill asbestos insulation.
Yeah.
Okay, get your house tested if you think that could be you.
Well, particularly if it's loose fibre, there's your danger. Oh, it's the loose fibre.
Absolutely. It is, yeah. But when it comes to what you just said, and there are houses...
Don't brush the wall.
Yeah, like... Like, Risey, I remember you coming in a few years ago when you were renovating and asbestos cracked and fell on your head.
Yeah, it did. So we had the asbestos sheets all over our house, every single room in the sheds. And, yeah, so I was removing the roof, trying to do it, obviously, without cracking it, because it's okay to touch, you know.
I've
heard it. You just can't. If I was sanding it and breathing in all the particles, it cracked, but it did crack on my head. And
particles went all over you?
Yeah, all over me. So I just had a shower.
Well, if I could just for a moment, put my dad's hat on.
Right.
Okay, dad's hat, who built a house out of fibro.
Yeah.
And this is going back to 2000.
Yeah.
But meaning 2000 when they were reacting about it, the house was built in the 60s. But dad, it's a bloody overreaction. Boy, fibro's all right, don't worry about it. Unless you're copping that for about 5 years straight in your lungs, you're good as gold, don't worry about it. Took the entire fibro roof off with a hanky over his mouth.
Oh, my God.
Good as gold, son. Busts up another hanky. But, okay, the reason I'm saying that is there is an overcaution to it, and why not?
Yep. Yeah.
But there is an overcaution to it. But I say, and why not? But you know what I mean? Like, if there's you've got a piece of fibro, then absolutely, it's not good. But that's why NASA turns up to take your roof off these days.
Well, did you have something on your... Were you covered when you were doing that roof?
Yeah.
Did you? You weren't, were you?
But never hanky on your mouth, mate.
No, I think I had like a dust mask. But yeah, unlike you, Steve, I kind of think, very, very limited exposure.
Okay.
Even there's a fence down my mother-in-law's, a whole fence covered in asbestos. It's an asbestos fence, so... Yeah, feel like it's everywhere.
Can we, because you two are making a lot of assumptions and neither of you are certified builders.
Are you saying my dad was wrong?
I'm saying both of you could be very, very, very wrong.
You're saying Steve's dad was wrong.
Yeah, thanks, Ross.
I'm just curious, is there someone with knowledge, a builder listening, or someone that just knows about this kind of stuff? Can you ring us up, please?
Our number's 49421029. We would love to talk to you.
My question to you is, there's a house standing beside me. It's a beautiful old terrace house, right? With the iron lace and all that kind of stuff. But there's an add-on out the back. I look at it every day going, is that asbestos? How do you know? Because...
Does it look like a fibro roof?
It looks like fibro walls and fibro roof.
There's like a honeycomby dot kind of thing on the inside of it.
Unless you break it up...
You don't know.
Well, no. Well, you'll know, but I'm saying it won't affect you unless they're crashing it up and taking it down. But if it's solid and
it's fine.
It's fine.
But there's a few cracks in it.
Oh, well, then you're going to die. And now we've got... Because I've had two mates die, a father's die, who were working in it on a regular basis.
Right.
If you know what I mean.
Okay.
Well. Even, you know, my mum's partner, he's got asbestos lungs.
Right. Robin.
Hi, how's it going, guys?
Yeah, a little bit confusing, Robin. What do you say?
Okay. So So my father had asbestosis, or mesothelioma.
Yep.
He was 88 when he died, and he built houses when he was in his 30s and 40s.
There you go.
Yeah, full of it.
It was dormant in his body for up to 40 years. He went from a 6'4" man of strength and solid muscle to 80, maybe 70 kilos when he passed, and it took 9 months for this horrible disease to put him in the ground.
Oh,
I got the same happening to someone in my family, Robin, who's currently still alive going through it. He's 92.
God love him.
And exactly what Robin described.
It's horrible. It's absolutely horrible. I wouldn't wish it on anybody. Dad went through all of the dreaded stages of his mind playing up on him.
Yep.
The morphine interacted with the mesothelioma. He went a little bit crazy.
Oh.
He was a big, strong man, the head of our family for all of my life. And all of a sudden, he was like a baby in the corner.
Mm-hmm. So sad.
Oh, it's a horrible thing to go through.
Anybody that's had anything to do with it, please. Help.
Yeah.
Thank you, Robin.
Thanks.
And again, I think it's that ongoing thing. I certainly know from my personal experiences, people have been around it building asbestos and constant.
Clint, now you're a remover of asbestos. What can you tell us about it?
Well, first off, what the last lady was just saying with her father working in it for many years, with massive exposure over a long period of time, and especially back then when there was no knowledge of the dangers of asbestos, you're very prone to, you've got a big chance to contract the disease. But with this day and age, with the knowledge that everyone has of the dangers of it, the stuff they found in that roof, that's pretty bad stuff. But the stuff you talk about that your shed's built out of and your fence is built out of, it's actually relatively safe. It's only really dangerous if you're cutting it or drilling it or sanding it. Removalists these days, know how to remove it pretty safely.
I was just going to say, Clint, which is what you do. That's what you do for a living. That's why you're fully protected and you know what you're doing. But it really is more of a danger when it's in particles, not when it's in solid form.
That's exactly right. Asbestos flat houses actually have, some of the better insulating properties to a lot of the newer materials that we use today, and it's a stronger material. It is dangerous. So only really when you're cutting it, sanding it, it's... nothing really to worry about. If you've got a roof on your house, I'd be wanting to change it, but it's not posing you any immediate danger. As long as it's not broken and you're not breaking it up and breathing it in.
So to be clear, Clint, my dad, Alf, was right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks,
Clint.
Appreciate your time.
See you.
I hate to tarnish his memory.
I don't think Clint would be wearing a hanky around his ears to do his job every day somehow.
Bloody thick hanky though, mate. Thick hanky, and he used to wet it. He used to wet it, and it'll be right, boy, go and wet your dad's hanky.
As soon as you said that, I had a flashback to my grandfather.
Yeah. Doing the same kind of thing.
Yeah. My grandfather would wear a hanky around his mouth when he was cutting wood on the wood mill thingy in the backyard.
Yeah.
It's like a hanky.
I like it when my dad, because he was very, very handy in all of that. And I'd love it if he saw someone now cutting wood with goggles on. Get those off! What's wrong with you?
Stay Drew and Steve. KWFM.
Getting money at